Hello friends and welcome to another jam-packed edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren and I'm joined by a man who's been cruising the tapas bars of Seville all weekend, Stuart Watson.
How are you doing? All right?
There he is. And here we are. Yes, I'm all right, Stu. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Just the two of us today.
Yeah. And there's been a running joke that you are never at work anymore. And I thought this would be a good opportunity for you to put your side of that across and maybe put this one to bed, given that Mark Heath is absent today because he's up a mountain.
Well,
you're at work today.
I am at work today. I want to launch a staunch defence of this, but I'm concerned that this is a tag, the Judith Chalmers tag, as I said on Twitter to someone that pointed it out, is only going to gather pace, because I am, for the first time in many years, missing quite a few games between now and Christmas for various stag do's, weddings, family gatherings, so I'm not even going to try and defend it. I've got quite a lot of holiday on the horizon. I've enjoyed my summer, as have you, my friend. You just got yours in a bit earlier, didn't you?
So mine went under the radar a little bit, I think, because we weren't recording these every week, and it wasn't sort of hyped up quite so much. But I did enjoy my summer. That's my pen.
We didn't record these because, as we've established, you're the only person that has the technology to do so. So.
Yeah, I did have 5 weeks off in eight at one point, but that's gone under the radar, whereas you have had the odd day here and there, which is when we happen to record these podcasts. But you look like you had a good time in Seville. You're looking very brown.
Very nice, mate. Very nice. Yeah, lots of food. All the major food groups were hit. Ham, cheese, beer, bread, all the good stuff. Very nice.
Good. Well, I went to Barnet. We'll talk about that in a minute. Probably as good as Seville, but just remember, if you're listening to us for the first time, you can subscribe on iTunes, Audio Boom, Deezer, Google Podcasts. Where else can you get us? Spotify, you can get us there as well. So make sure you subscribe and leave us a 5-star Flames review, otherwise Mark Heath will kick off, because that's what he does. He is climbing Ben Nevis as we speak, which I believe you've done before, Stu, is that right?
Yeah, I heard you boys chatting about it in the last pod. Myself and Mark and a few other guys did it a few years back. Bloody hard. I heard Mark mention the projectile vomit story. That happened for me halfway up Snowdon, which was the third and final mountain. So I'm sure he's enjoying a more leisurely stroll up there with his good lady today. I'm sure he can enjoy the views a little bit more. But we're against the clock. You're meant to try and do it in 24 hours. I think we missed out by about 2 hours in the end. But
he's just doing one mountain though. Lazy.
It is. Yeah.
Joke.
He will not enjoy that description of him. He will fight you.
I'm sure he will. Do you want to hear about Barnet? Are you?
Yes, please, are you friend. We haven't really had a proper Barnet catch up, no? Let's fill me in.
Barnet was too hot for my liking. The sun was shining on my face for the whole game, and I don't like the heat at the best of times. That's my moan out of the way. More positives. I quite liked what I saw from Ipswich. They moved the ball really nicely. Cole Skews in particular looked really, really good in the system as the water carrier, the Deschamps role, moving the ball, played a few nice long passes as well. Knocked the ball around, and as I'm sure you've seen, you've retweeted the video, the goal was really nice, wasn't it? Some nice slick passing movement football involving wingers, fullbacks, midfielders, and produced a goal into the bottom corner. So plenty for Paul to learn from that one. But they're quite a long way from being the finished article just yet. There's some holes in that team.
Yeah, I think as you pointed out in your observation piece online that I read, I think we kind of know which way the system's going now, and the style of play and some of Paul's philosophies and ethos, easy for me to say, but I think you're right. In terms of personnel, I think he's still very much away from putting his own stamp on things at the moment. It sounds like Ellis Harrison's coming in, who I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute. But yeah, the goal itself was something that we'd seen in the previous games in terms of Skews dropping almost into a back three and taking the ball off the defence. It's getting the ball forward early, cutting out the middle third almost. It was a it was a ball with purpose. It was always looking to play forward. You know, I think in days gone by, Cole Skuse would go and get the ball. Well, first of all, would he actually go and show for the ball off the defence? For me, that didn't happen enough. And secondly, if he did get the ball, it would be sideways or backwards. This time, he goes and gets it, he turns and he plays a, 30, 40 yard ball, 2 feet, through the middle of the park, and all of a sudden Ipswich have got options. Then, and I think once they get into the final third, it's going to be clear that the plan is get it wide, get it to the wide boys, who can then try and make something happen. Gwion Edwards, who I thought was very bright and exciting against Crawley, sounds like he added to that at the weekend.
Yeah, same again, wants the ball all the time, and when he gets it, he's only got one thought, and that's to run and run at people and scare people, and that's what he did for the goal.
And that creates space for the fullbacks who are encouraged to get forward and position themselves quite high. As we talked about, Skuse dropping deep almost makes it a back three. The wingers create a bit of carnage in the final third, and then you can have a underlapping, or on this occasion with Miles Kennell, an underlapping fullback. So I didn't think that was any coincidence that we've seen a fullback on the score sheet. So it's encouraging signs. I think there's still work to be done, but I think we both like what we've seen so far.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Bart back in the goal. He did absolutely nothing during the game because he didn't need to, but just nice to see him there. Mm-hmm. He looked happy. Good news.
And so he should. So he should, he settled in Suffolk. I'm sure he said before about his daughter burst into tears when she asked him, are we going to have to move away from Ipswich? They love their little family home in Martlesham. I don't think he ever really wanted to go. I think he just wanted to be, everyone wants to be appreciated in their job. He's done a mighty fine job for 2 years. He's now one of the club's higher earners, and so he should be. So, great news that Bart's still here.
Right, what order should we take these in? We've got Martin Waghorn to discuss, which seems a bit of a all over the place situation, and we've got Ellis Harrison, who at the time of recording this, Ipswich had a bid accepted, but the deal's not been tied up. There's every chance by the time you're listening that deal's done, and Ellis Harrison is Ipswich Town's new centre forward.
Well, I think we've just been discussing this. I think the first thing that's important to stress is I don't think either of us see Harrison as a Waghorn replacement per se. I think he's someone that Hurst would have targeted anyway. They clearly needed an extra striker, as it was with David McGoldrick moving on. So I wouldn't read too much into that in terms of the Waghorn situation. Let's deal with Waghorn second. Harrison,
let's talk about
first
Harrison.
Of all, you've just made the comparison before we came in here, Andy. He's very Colton Morris-esque, who was the lone frontman for Shrewsbury last year. We've seen already that Paul Hurst is going to play, by the looks of things, the same system that he played for Shrewsbury last year, which was 4-2-3-1, sometimes 4-1-4-1 away from home. But the bottom line is it will be a lone striker or a central striker. And to do that, you need to be a certain type of striker. You need to be physical. You need to be able to hold it up. You need to be a well-rounded striker. And Harrison seems like he is that sort of player.
Yeah, I think by the sounds of things, he played quite a lot as a lone striker for Bristol Rovers, who of course last season lost two of their main other forward threats, Billy Bowden and was it Matt Taylor, who went to Bristol City.
Yes, he could.
So he's kind of emerged from the shadows a little bit. Scored 14 goals. He's strong. He's quick, and he's good in the air. Physical. Ticks quite a few boxes there, and some boxes that maybe aren't checked by the rest of the strikers.
Yeah, and I think Paul Hurst will have had his system in mind, and then he would have immediately looked at the squad and the strikers at his disposal. I think all three of Ipswich's strikers on their books currently are probably better in a two. Freddie Sears certainly, we know, is better in a two. I still think Joe Garner is probably his best football's been in a two over the years. Waghorn, we're undecided yet whether his best position is an out-and-out number nine or as a sort of a clever little player in as a 10. Hurst immediately sort of said he sees Waghorn more as the deeper lying forward, doesn't he? So it looks like I think it will probably be Harrison and Garner, should Garner stay, battling it out for that one striker slot, with Waghorn in behind as it stands. But of course, we'll move on to the Waghorn situation.
Go on then. Let's move on to the Waghorn situation, which seems a complicated one, particularly with Sheffield United. A bit of smoke and mirrors. I'm not sure how much of that you've seen over the weekend while you were on the sangria and the lager stew. But Chris Wilder's been quite outspoken about his club's ability.
Overpriced, I think, was the phrase he's used. Am I right?
Yeah, and then after the game at the weekend, said that the bid of around £5 million is still there waiting for an answer. So how are you reading this situation? Because I'm not sure, if I'm honest.
This is not based on any inside information. This is just us talking really from a outside looking in here before anyone gets carried away. But I get the feeling Hurst is very keen to put his own stamp on this squad, understandably so. He knows that he's got to raise his own funds to go out and to buy. I think from an Ipswich point of view, if the bidding reaches the sort of reported levels that, you know, the price tag that's being talked about of 8 to 10 million, I think if it gets towards that, and I can hear people shouting already at me, but that might be decent business. Because I was just chatting to you earlier, wasn't I? I can use two different examples here of why it would be good and why it would be bad to sell Martin Waghorn in recent Ipswich Town history. David McGoldrick is the first one. £7-8 million was on the table from Leicester City a few years back. Ipswich turned it down. And in hindsight, that was a bad move because he's gone on. No one could have foreseen the injuries that were to come and all the rest of it. But injuries, loss of form, he's ended up leaving on a Bosman free transfer. So hindsight says Ipswich should have cashed in while his value was high. The other example of why it might be a bad move is Daryl Murphy leaving to Newcastle. They got £3 million very late in the window. That one dragged on and on. I think they ended up with a week, did they, to replace him. Late scramble, didn't get anyone that they really wanted and ended up with Leon Best, and that was a complete disaster, and that was a big reason that Ipswich ended up stagnating, really, in not replacing Murphy. So the last thing we want is for that late scramble to happen again. If Waghorn's going to go, I think it needs to happen fairly soon so that they can go and replace him. But £8 million for a player that they paid $250,000 for last year, 28. I desperately hope that Martin Waghorn can kick on and do it again or better it. It's a big ask though, and how many times do we see players not quite replicate a golden season like that? I actually think he can, because he's that sort of driven character, and I think he's in a hot period of his career, and I know the fans love him, and I know it's about what he's worth to Ipswich Town. Could they go out and replace him in a short period of time? That's the big ask. I've kind of argued against myself, and that's where I'm at. I'm undecided as to what the right thing is to do.
You talk about replacing him. Does Hurst need to replace him? Would Hurst even be looking to replace him? Does he fit into what Paul is trying to do? I think we both said that he doesn't. You know, he's not typically the kind of central striker that Hurst wants. And is he really a number 10? Like, he's a very talented football player, a very well-rounded football player, and a very intelligent football player who, wherever he was played by McCarthy last season, he did a very good job. But does he fit into any of these roles that Hurst? And so will he even be trying to replace him, should he go? In body, yes.
In terms of a direct replacement in the team, in terms of the system, possibly not. In terms of filling the void of 16 goals and 11 assists, then yes. Is Ellis Harrison going to do that in his first season in the Championship? We don't know. You know, if others might spread the goals and the assists out a little bit more. Who's going to play in the 10? If it's going to be Garner/Harrison as the 9, who's going to play in behind him? If it's not Waghorn, it's a big ask to expect Andre Dizel to go and play 40 plus games next year off the back of a year out. That's not going to happen. Teddy Bishop, Emir Hughes, both very capable of being that type of 10 that can glide past people. I mean, he played Nolan in that role for Shrewsbury, and he was more of a midfielder than a striker. maybe he wants to go down that route, which would point more towards a Hughes, a Dizelle, a Bishop. Well, Hughes and Dizelle aren't ready yet. Hughes and Bishop aren't ready yet. Dizelle's big ask, as I've just mentioned. Who else are you gonna put in there? Maybe they need to go out and get another option there. Someone that's versatile that can play in a few different forward positions. I don't know.
Right then, Stu. Saying all that, what's the 11 going to be for Blackburn? I've got something scribbled in front of me now. Do you want me to run you through? This is what I think. This is going to serve as a hot take, I think. This is what I think we could see on the opening day against Blackburn. Bart in goal. No surprises there. Right back, which we've both just been discussing how interesting a situation that is. But for me, I would put Josh Emmanuel in there, and I'll tell you why a bit later. Centre-backs are Luke Wolfenden and Luke Chambers. And I think Knudsen will do enough to force his way back in at left back. A midfield two of Skews, who I think rubber stamped his starting place with his performance at Barnet at the weekend alongside Nydam. Then a three of Ward, Dizelle and Gwion Edwards behind the new boy, assuming it gets done, Ellis Harrison. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe a couple little tweaks to that.
Go on then, tweak me.
I've got a feeling. I like Wolfenden. I liked him very much at Palace last season when he played right back. Kept just abiding memory of him keeping a flying Andros Townsend quiet that day was very good, and I've liked him even more since I've seen him at centre back. He's not looked out of place pre-season, but having said all of that, I think Jonas Knudsen might start the first day at centre back if no one comes in, and I think there will be probably a centre back coming in. So yeah, Barton goal, Kenlock left back, Emmanuel right back.
We'll talk right backs in a minute.
Okay. Chambers is a given. I think it might be Knudsen at centre back and or a new boy. Probably looking likely, isn't it? I think
there'll be a new one.
Skews and I think Downs might start.
This is I think this is a toss up, Nydam and Downs. And they come as a pair, don't they? Whenever you talk about one, the other one's not far behind. I like Nydam because he's left-footed and can move the ball around a little bit more than Downs, but I also like Downs' grit, which I assume is probably why you've put him in there. A bit more grit, maybe?
Yeah, just reading the signals from what Paul Hurst has said, I think Ipswich, my understanding of it is that they turned down an England call-up for Downs to the under-19s, and I think Hurst identified him from the video footage very early on as someone that he quite liked. So I think, you know, we've seen him start a couple of games every Downs now in pre-season.
Yep.
I just think he might go for that little bit of extra insurance policy. Edwards will almost certainly start in one of the wing roles. Ward is probably the only other wing option as it stands on the right, so I'll go with that. And this is where it gets interesting. You've not put Waghorn in your team.
I haven't put Martin Waghorn in the team, and that is just a gut. That's going with my gut, which I tend to do a lot in life.
Yeah.
Just a gut feeling.
I'm going to say Waghorn will be the 10 behind Harrison, probably, given that Garner's missed a fair chunk of pre-season thus far. I do think Dizelle's going to be a very key player this season, but I just think they might ease him in, wrap him in cotton wool a little bit to start with. Interesting, though.
Interesting.
Options there, isn't there?
Should we briefly talk right-backs before we get onto the mailbag? Some nice questions in the mailbag today. Thanks for getting them in, everyone. How are you reading this right-back thing? Because there's three very different players in there. There's Barry Cotter, who is a bit of an enigma, I think. He flies forward, he's got the tricks, no longer dreaded, which I like. Then there's Jordan Spence, who's a bit more of a stay-at-home, safer option, but has got the height, because Hurst likes to hit these wing-backs wide. He can win the ball in the air. And then Josh Emmanuel, who's a bit of a hybrid of the two, come back a bit more rounded as a player from his spell at Rotherham. And we've both gone for Emmanuel in our starting side. It's an interesting battle, though.
That's one of the hardest positions to sort of call at the moment. I think maybe Paul Hurst possibly doesn't know that himself. Emmanuel started at Barnet. I'm sure Spence will probably start at MK tomorrow night as we speak.
It's not going to be Cotter, though, is it? I don't think he's had anywhere near enough first team
minutes. If he was really truly in the frame, I think we'd have seen more of him in pre-season thus far. He's going to want full-backs that bomb on. Spence can certainly do that. I thought some of his best football was when, you know, the reins were off, the shackles were off, I should say, and he bombed forward a bit. I just think defensively he's looked a bit suspect at times, which he started centre-back in that first pre-season game against Braintree and had a bit of a mare.
I think Hurst is, he's not a centre-back for Paul Hurst, is he? I think that looks clear.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, so toss up there at right back at the moment. It's very difficult to say, but given Hurst quite likes players that have learnt their trade in the lower divisions, and I think he might like Emmanuel. You've probably seen him close quarters, didn't he, in League One last year?
Yep.
So
League One player final on the team that denied him a promotion for his CV. But we shall see. We'll learn loads more about this at MK tomorrow night. So we'll talk about that next week, probably. But should we jump onto the mailbag, Stu?
Yes.
Yes. Can you give me a number between 1 and 7, please?
6.
6. Just doing some maths. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's Alistair Butcher. Are you guys slightly concerned that all of these new up-and-coming players signed from lower league clubs may not work? New system by Paul Hurst may take an age to work in the league against some huge clubs.
I think there's no getting away from the fact that maybe that feels a little bit like an elephant in the room at the moment, that we're all getting carried away by a new era, an exciting new brand of football, and we all like what Paul Hurst has had to say. I think there is, I'd be lying if there wasn't a niggling doubt in the back of our minds that this could all go wrong, that you know, this goes back to the whole be careful what you wish for argument with Mick leaving, and without sort of stirring all that up again. I've just seen the journalists that cover all the championship clubs are starting to do their pre-season predictions, and the first one that's come in has got Ipswich amongst the three relegated clubs. So I think maybe people from the outside looking in are certainly looking at it as a major gamble for Ipswich, and that, you know, they could go backwards. But my gut feeling is it's a gamble that they had to take. We've been saying that for a long time. What was the alternative was just sort of stagnation and treading water. Do I think Ipswich are going to take a giant leap forwards this season? No, I don't, because I think it's going to take time. I think it is, you know, he needed those first 6 months at Shrewsbury to kind of really shape things up before turning them into a force. I think this, to use an age-old phrase, could be a bit of a transitional period, but I think it could be a fun transitional period. I think we're going to see a lot of things unfold before our eyes and pieces of the jigsaw falling into the place, and I think hopefully, a bit like we did with England over the summer, we all fall back in love with Ipswich and reconnect with them a bit more, and that's all we can hope for, really.
One thing I don't buy, and obviously we've just said there's a nagging doubt at the back of the mind, but one thing I don't mind is an expression that I've seen going around on Twitter a little bit, is if you buy League One players, you have a League One team. Mm. And I don't really buy that, because you're hand-picking football players here. You're not taking a team of League One football players. You're taking players that you think have got the potential to play up further.
Well, let's give a couple of examples. Bournemouth, Huddersfield, you know, they've gone up through the division. Southampton, Norwich before. We've seen teams get promoted to the Premier League with players that have got League One, plenty of League One sort of experience per se in there. I think, you know, it brings a lot of hunger, and that is obviously what Paul Hurst, his whole outlook is, that you get hungry players, you get people that are subconsciously, perhaps people that have been in the same division for a long time, think they've found their level and maybe just gone into a bit of a comfort zone. With players that you're taking from a lower level, they've got a real hunger to keep proving themselves, and just as he's got his own hunger to keep proving himself. So yeah, I don't sort of buy into this that you're almost downgrading the squad by getting players from a lower level. I think it's what Ipswich fans have been crying out for, really, to take a punt on. You can't afford the very best players, so take a punt on some of the lower ones.
Frankie Weaver, do you feel like Harrison will be a starter up top come Blackburn? I think we both put him in our sides, haven't we? I think he hasn't even signed yet. We're recording this before he's signed, but it's going to go through. And I think we can both see him as a starter on the opening day.
Yeah, I think as we discussed, he wants a sort of a more rounded number nine, and I think Harrison will be that man, especially seeing as Garner's had his injuries. I think that might just tip the balance towards him.
Well, you mentioned Garner. We'll take a question on Garner when I can find it on my little sheet. Ian Taylor, any reason as to why Garner hasn't featured much in pre-season, not in Hurst's plans? And we think this knee, it's a knee injury. He's had his an injection in his knee, and we think that's genuine.
Yeah, I know he's been linked with a move away early in the window, so that's led to a few conspiracy theories as to his absence, but he's had an injection in his knee and he had plenty of injury problems last year. I mean, the amount of injuries he played through last year, which is testament to his sort of warrior spirit. He was playing with knee problems, he had a minor fractured skull at one stage, I think he had a shoulder problem from pre-season onwards that needed an operation really. So, yes, genuine injury problems that have just kept him out in pre-season. And Hurst has made it very clear from day one that those players that have been fit throughout pre-season and have got the minutes and the fitness under their belt will have a huge advantage over the others. And that includes someone like Jonas Knudsen now coming back late from the World Cup. Certainly the likes of Hughes, Adeyemi Bishop, who have not yet featured in pre-season, I don't think they're going to be anywhere near the first team picture come the opening week, because he wants people that have got the fitness and the running in their legs, because that's what he puts a great emphasis on. So, Garner, just injuries, yeah.
Rodney Marshall, is Paul Hurst being unnecessarily assertive when warning a player such as Knudsen that he'll have to prove himself? No, I don't think he's being unnecessarily assertive at all. I think that's... these are conversations that he's stressed to us he's had with these players before. He's not just chucking these out into the media. Like, he's had these private conversations with football players, and that's right, isn't it? You do have to prove yourself. Like, what have you done for me lately? That's the way that it is.
Yeah, I think it's really refreshing. I like it, and I know where people are coming from, that it's a bold thing to do, and I do wonder how it will go down with the players. And this goes back to one of the previous questions about slightly concerned the nagging doubt, is that I like everything about Paul Hurst and what he's saying and how he's going about things at the moment. But if you're a player, if you're an established championship player or someone who's played it a bit higher, and someone comes in and changes your whole world upside down, they all loved Mick. They really did all, you know, and we saw that from all of the comments from the players, you know, genuine sadness that he moved on because he treated them like, you know, respected them as human beings and their family life, and didn't suddenly say, right, your day off's cancelled tomorrow, you're coming in, and all that sort of stuff. So for someone else to come in whose managerial career so far is Ilkeston and Grimsby and Shrewsbury, to come in and start saying some sort of home truths and shaking things up, you just wonder whether everyone will completely buy into it. From what I understand, you know, they are buying into it, and I think we discussed this in a previous podcast. Luke Chambers is going to be absolutely key to that, because he is the dressing room leader. He is very much the bridge from manager to players, and he needs to be on board with this, and I think that will filter to the rest of the players. But no, I like it. I think it was needed. I think Ipswich had got stale, stagnant, all those words that we've been using, and it's a breath of fresh air that someone can come in. And, you know, he's not pulled out any names in particular, but he said, you know, an example is Luke Chambers. Great career, been a great player for Ipswich, but as you've said, you're only as good as your last season, and doesn't care what you've done in the past, it's what you can do in the future, and that's got to be right.
I like that he uses Chambo as the example there, because I think they clearly have this conversation, and Chambo can take it. Like, he'll know that that's the case. He's an experienced guy, and he'll know that he can take it. Something else I'm glad about is that there's no questions in the mailbag this week about me fighting Chris Doig, because I don't want to fight Chris Doig. Let's clear that up now. He'd win. Let's just clear this up. Yeah, we're done here, aren't
there'd
we?
There'd be a fatality, my friends.
And it wouldn't be Mr. Doig.
No. So let's just leave that one. Mark does all the fighting in our department.
I think he's found a little fight on the way up. Ben Nevitt, he sent in a little picture just now, actually, of him sunglassed up, up a mountain. He's so fighty.
He is, yeah. We're lovers, not fighters, aren't exactly. we? Us two.
Exactly. Only lovers on the road. Did you see that lovely picture
together,
of us from the other night?
I should clear that up. What?
Did you see the picture of us that our lovely photographer Steve Waller took the other day?
I did, yeah, in the pitch black dark.
I'm getting it framed.
At East Grinstead.
I'm getting that put up in our house. Vicky really liked it, my wife. So you're going up on the walls, my friend.
Nice, yeah. The glamour of our job that was, wasn't it? First there at East Grinstead, last out, pitch black dark, tapping away, weren't we?
She calls you my work husband.
Yeah. I feel like that is the case, yeah. Mm.
Maybe we'll have to do something
I've had a
official.
Few work husbands.
Well, yeah, this is what concerns me, because you seem to, like, use, abuse and spew
yeah,
them out
I've
the other
kind
end.
I've gone through a couple of divorces already, haven't I, with Dave Gooderham and Chris Brammer. So
have I elsewhere, but you've kind of stayed at the scene of the crime, whereas I've moved away from my previous relationships.
Have you got much baggage?
I do have some baggage, but none of it's here, so it's a fresh start for me. Nobody can see my baggage, but you've got baggage, and I've kind of taken that on, which is fine. Should we leave this?
I don't know where we're going.
There's a few more in the mailbag, mostly relating to transfers. We'll tie up Jack Phillips and Charlie Hillman's all in one. Anything in Connor Townsend, Tom Bradshaw and Curtis Tilt? I think the first two, Townsend and Bradshaw, they are replacements. They are players that are being looked
potential
at as potential replacements for players. Should Martin Whitehorn move on, that would be Bradshaw. And should Jonas Knudsen move on, which there's no indication that might be happening at the moment, but he's a player entering the final year of his contract. He's just come off the World Cup. So you'd think if there's ever going to be any interest in him, that would be now. We're not aware of any at the moment, but should there be?
Yeah.
Connor Townsend from Scunthorpe could be one that they go for.
Yeah, just putting the feelers out, as all clubs are, in terms of, like we said, with the Bart situation earlier in the summer, with Fotheringham up at Rangers, you just got to have backup options should things happen. So when I talked about the late scramble with potentially Waghorn moving on, that obviously I think plan A is to keep him, but it's important to have a plan B in place. Bradshaw, someone I've always liked when I've seen him, actually.
He's a bit more of a Waghorn kind of player, isn't he? A bit more football intelligence. He's not an out-and-out striker. He can drop a bit deeper and can play a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the Waghorn replacement.
I don't know. I think you're right. Tilt, we think, is very much a prime target for that centre-back slot. There might just be a bit of gamesmanship, a bit of brinkmanship going in terms of fees and bids. There's talk of other clubs being interested as well, so I can still see that one happening, can't you?
Yeah, I can, very much so. Dylan, who has a very obscure username made up of numbers and letters on Twitter, which I'm not going to read out. Who's furthest ahead in their development out of Drinan, Morris, Fellaini?
Good question. I'd have probably at various different stages over the last few months given you a different name out of those three.
I want what you want right now.
Well, we've both said that we think Drinan will be very much up Paul Hurst Street in terms of what he wants from a leading striker. He's a mini Daryl Murphy. He could play that number nine role, couldn't he? So I think he's got a chance, although we haven't seen much of him in the first team picture thus far, so maybe not.
Fellaini was with the first team on Saturday. Drinan wasn't, which is interesting, I guess. It probably shows you where Paul Hurst's thinking on that one.
Yeah, Morris, surprise call-up for the England under-19s. I think that's perhaps more to do with the fact that a lot of clubs blocked various different call-ups. He himself spoke to him on the phone out in Finland just when the squad met up. He's certainly keen to make his mark, but I just think being away with England might go against him. As discussed earlier, I think people that have been in the camp throughout the summer have just got that little bit of an edge at the moment. Maybe Morris's breakthrough will happen later in the season, but he's a smaller, slighter striker. So I'm not, again, where does he fit into this Hurst way of playing? More likely to be in one of the wider roles than as an out-and-out striker. Fellaini is certainly someone who's progress accelerated towards the back end of last season. Played in that cup game against Palace, disappeared for a long time, and finished the season with a bang, getting that professional contract. He seems to have added to the physical aspect of his game as well. So I think they're all pretty much on a par, and I think that, you know, they've all said separately that having those three young strikers all sort of battling really for one slot on the bench, I would say, at the moment. The McGoldrick departure at the moment has opened up, I would say, a sort of a fourth striking spot in the first team, and they're all trying to sort of go for that one slot.
Right, we're going to leave this with some breaking news from Bristol Rovers. Bristol Rovers have agreed an undisclosed fee with an unnamed club for the sale of striker Ellis Harrison. Ellis will therefore be given permission to discuss personal terms and will not travel with the squad to Holland for this week's training camp. The club will be making no further comment at this time.
He's having his medical at Ipswich today, Andy. He's in Ipswich.
Yeah. I think the unnamed club is Ipswich, isn't it? As we reported this morning.
Yeah, they're quite. I think personal terms are being discussed as we speak, and the medicals now are. Let's give you a little insight into how these things break now. Medicals are more. What's the word I'm looking for, Andy? They're more rigorous than ever before now. I think, you know, especially with Ipswich, with the Emir Hughes situation, and if you're paying out good money for an asset, you want to make sure that they're going to be able to play more often than not. So I think Gwion Edwards went through a pretty rigorous medical. He's had his injury problems of late, obviously past that. And Ellis Harrison will be going through the same as we speak. They do. They check heart tests and all sorts. And sometimes the results on those take about 24 hours to come back. So it gets to the stage where, you know, everyone and his wife knows that the signing's happening before the two clubs, frustratingly, are able to announce it formally. But I think Harrison is all but done and dusted.
I'd really like a medical. Just a full body medical, which I'd just like one.
Yeah.
Yeah, just cover all the bases, because you can't do that, can you, as a normal person? I'd like a full body medical, please.
Just go up to, I don't know where you go, up to private hospital and. I don't think either of us would pass.
It depends what you're having the medical for.
To be a professional footballer.
Yeah, I would probably fail that one. Anyway, should we go? Should we go and do some work?
Probably should do some stuff on the website about Harrison, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
I'm going to try and speak to Marcus Stewart.
Are you?
Who is the assistant manager at Bristol Rovers, and he will have taught Ellis Harrison a thing or two about playing up front, which I'm sure is music.
Well,
too.
He has actually. I was reading this morning that he has in fact praised Marcus Stewart's shooting sessions as being good, but are they as good as TC's? That's what we'll find out. I'm sure you'll find out if Stuart Watson has been successful in speaking to Marcus Stewart by whether it appears on our website or not, so check that. Thank you for listening, thanks for subscribing. Please go out and leave us a review. They're really, really helpful for our egos, particularly Mark, who loves these kind of things. Hopefully he comes back from the mountain fit. He'd probably pass a medical. He does a lot of vigorous fighting stuff, which gets him nice and fit. But we're gonna leave you to it. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.